It's my favorite day of the week, Thursday in New York City. How are you feeling, my friends? My name is Mark Farrell. This show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. Gary Null follows me today. Gary knows, I don't know where Gary's broadcasting from today. Maybe Guam. He's going to be at noon. We got a great show coming your way. Wow. So our second guest today has the job that possibly you've dreamt of. And yeah, well, I know you dream about sex, and maybe you're dreaming about becoming a sex columnist. Well, we're going to meet Jasmine Loeb in just a few minutes because, you know, she's just an amazing person on every level. Writer, producer, actor, former figure skater, and a hell of a person. We're going to meet her in just a few minutes. So last week, I took a little vacation, so my apologies for my absence on Thursday. And I went on a cruise, begrudgingly because it's not something I've ever wanted to entertain, because it seems like just a floating Petri dish to me. But putting all that aside, I went on my cruise because my wife cajoled me into saying, well, listen, after the cruise, we can go to Clearwater, Florida. I'm like, okay, I love Clearwater, Florida. But more importantly, I went on this cruise to avoid what took place a week ago Tuesday. Because I figured if we're in the middle of the Atlantic and Hillary Clinton loses, we can just lower the dinghy and, you know, with our passports, all four of us, my two kids, my beautiful wife, and set sail to another country, another land, another promise, another beginning where the American dream possibly could live, because who knows if the American dream will still be alive and well here. So it was pretty funny, man. But sad. And I'm not going to belabor the point about who won. But actually, I will say that as of this morning, about 7 a.m. this morning, I read that Hillary Clinton, and believe me, she is scarred and damaged goods. If my son, my 7-year-old, would have run against Donald Trump, he would have won. If any of your friends would have run against Donald Trump, I'm sure they would have won. But unfortunately, Trump is the president-elect. Did I just say that? Holy shit. Still in disbelief. Anyway, let's hold our breath for the Electorate College. But so there we are, afloat in the sea. And yeah, the reality was I almost got caught lowering the dinghy. The captain said, hey, listen, you just can't do this. I understand, you know, the world is in a tumultuous place right now. Our leader is, yeah, exactly. Very, very questionable. But the reality is that is what we're moving forward to. So now the popular vote as of this morning at 7 a.m., Hillary Clinton up 1 million votes. 1 million votes. So, you know, it's gaining momentum. And so a lot of people aren't aware of this, and this is becoming more, I don't know why the media is not publicizing this more and doing it more good. I think they're fueling more of the negative stuff, of course. But I want to just put this out there very quickly that the Electoral College, as you know, has a certain amount of people per state, depending on the size, that can vote for either party. They get fined in some states if you're electoral college representative and you're Republican and you vote Democratic and vice versa. But the reality is they can, and this takes place in December. So I think the vote standings right now are Trump 270 and Hillary like 220-ish. And I could be wrong because, this is over a week ago and I can't even remember what I did yesterday. So that's the reality of it. So there is a slim chance, I mean slim, that this could be reversed. The Electorate College could outdo the popular vote, actually mirror the popular vote and have Hillary in office. I don't know why it would take so long. I don't know why this is held in December, because I guess there are still votes still being counted. But I just, the upside is that it would be cool. But I'm really scared of the uproar and uprising the country would be in if this actually did take place, because I am totally, totally against any violence. I'm totally for protesting peacefully. We live in a democracy, I think, up until the end of this year we do. So I just think it's great. But imagine if this was overturned and the Electorate College did bring Hillary to the White House. You know, I would be elated, but for the first 4 weeks, 6 weeks, I just would be so incredibly afraid of what the reality, the pushback would be from our nation. Because here we are, you know, the Democrats are supposedly, you know, who knows who's more of a peaceful bunch, but you know, there's a lot of crap going down. And on a positive side for the Trump supporters, what's going on in terms of what they're very hopeful for, holding, and I'm not going to belabor this, holding signs up in schools, teachers saying inappropriate, really, really inappropriate things to other students, and you name it, everything on social media. So I can't imagine, and that's because they won 47% of the vote. So I can't imagine what would happen, actually, if this was overturned. But anyway, so let me tell you about some fun things on a cruise. It's over. Oh, my God. Yeah, you know, it was kind of fun. Would I ever do a cruise again besides doing it for my father-in-law, who had a very big milestone birthday? That's why we did it. It was great to be together with a family, and I suggest obviously doing anything at any time with your family because it's a great thing to do. But would I do another cruise? Well, let me just tell you this. In New York City, you know, you have all these restaurants like corner bodegas, and they have food in them. And, you know, you could have anywhere from like shrimp to like pizza and paninis in between. And the turnover is so fast because you could have 50, 100, 150 people in there an hour. So you don't think twice about those. But now on a cruise ship, you got somebody cooking or multiple people cooking for 2,000, 2,500 people, 3,000 people. And it's all these people on the boat, and I'm stereotyping now, of course, so please don't hate me, that probably don't have gym memberships and are sedentary and sometimes not the nicest people, and they are there for one reason only. I don't think for the views, the sights, the rooms, they're there to pig out. They are there to seriously pig down, throw out, throw down, man. Like, I'm looking at the salad bar. I first get on the boat, I'm looking for the salad bar, and I'm looking at the salad bar, I'm like, whoa, 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 I'm totally crestfallen because it's not that plentiful. It's not a smorgasbord of, like, all the things you think a salad bar would have on a cruise ship, because you know why? I realize nobody's eating salad. I'm the only asshole who's looking for salad and going to the gym twice a day because their gym really rocked. It was really cool. Anyway, kudos to Royal Caribbean because it was a nice job, and the customer service was really, really cool. It was pretty incredible, so I appreciate that. But my wife and I made a pact during the cruise because we voted before we left that we wouldn't talk about the election to anybody prior, during, and post, because this is before, actually, we knew the fallout, how bad it was going to be. But we just realized that, listen, we're stuck on a floating town here, and we can't have any conflicts with people that we're sharing a table with. And luckily, we had 9 people, so we didn't have to share a table with anybody. But even my brother-in-law actually voted for an independent, which is fine. It just was a kind of not a PC thing to do, was talk about this. And it was kind of infuriating because, you know, I was very involved, ensconced, just like you probably, about, you know, for the last, you couldn't escape it, for the last 6 months, 8 months, a year of all these candidates on both sides of the aisle or party lines, and what it dwindled down to. So it was very, very kind of frustrating because I was really, really kind of antsy about not throwing up on the ship that was moving a lot. Besides that. But more importantly, like really talking about something that's very topical, top of my mind. Because, you know, you're on a cruise ship, you're having fun, but also, you know, I'm a worldly guy. I want to follow what's going on in our country. And that was our decision, certainly, to go on a cruise ship during then because it just worked out that way because kids were off that week, et cetera, et cetera. But my wife and I said, yeah, we can't talk about this to anybody because don't make any jokes because you never know anyone's political following and interests. So we didn't. And but, you know, you're in line waiting for food or, you know, you hear somebody over talking and they're like, yeah, I was up till 4 a.m. watching Donald Trump kick this country's ass and blah, blah, blah. And so was I. And I was just in total, total disbelief. I was actually kind of paralyzed in bed just watching this and while hearing the ocean. Actually, the cool thing was the balcony on his ship was huge. It was like 10 by 15. I could not believe how big it was, almost as big as the room. But it was just kind of disturbing how our country can and take something so, so significant, the highest political office in the nation, and put an entertainer in there, a businessman who hasn't been that successful in that office. Yeah, kind of interesting. So I also want to share with you about a movie festival I was invited to speak at Montclair University 2-3 weeks ago. It's called Real Abilities. We've actually had the director of the Real Abilities Film Festival that actually originated in New York City right here at the Jewish Community Center. JCC. And it's a phenomenal festival that's actually national, biggest festival in the world. It's all about persons with disabilities. All the films are. And I just did this, and I thought, hey, that's Donald Trump sounding. Anyway, so it was a great festival. So usually I take part of the one in New York City here, but I was invited to speak at the one in New Jersey at Montclair University, and it was amazing. the movie I was screening was called The Finishers, about a father and son team, and what country they were, in France, I forget the countryside, and it's based on a real story because years ago, there was a family called the Hoyts, a father and son. I believe the son has CP or MS, and I'm sorry I'm not exact about this, but it was a few weeks ago. And this is reality. This is what took place in the early 90s. And the son said to his father, hey, there's a local race this weekend, a running race. Maybe you could push me in my chair. And they did that. And they live in Boston or in the Massachusetts area. And the son said to his father afterwards, he never felt so free in his life during those 3 or 5 miles. So that was the beginning of a decade or more of marathons, triathlons, duathlons, and more. So the Hoyt family was really, really impressionable on a country and a nation, because I remember watching the Hawaiian Ironman in Hawaii. It's actually called sponsored by Gatorade, I think, for years. And I was mesmerized by this because I started doing triathlons back in 1988, well before they became popular, I think just as Triathlete magazine was coming onto the scene. So here was this family. So the father, who was not young by any stretch of the imagination, I'd say in his early 50s, started competing with his son, who wasn't that small. I'm not sure, but he was probably 15 at the time, 16. And probably a good 5'5", 5'7", in the chair. So what happens in a triathlon, obviously it's swim, bike, run. So in the swim, he actually tows his son, and which is a pretty incredible feat as well. Because first of all, in a triathlon, especially at the Hawaiian Ironman triathlon, the biggest and most prestigious triathlon event in the world, thousands of people. So the mass start looks like, you ever see like a National Geographic or a movie where there's just penguins or just sea animals, just like crazy, crazy tumultuous water or just white water? That's what the mass start looks like. So now here's this gentleman towing his son in a raft with a tether around his waist over a 2.4-mile swim, right? Unfathomable, right? So he gets out of the water, has to carry his son because you cannot have any assistance in a triathlon. Otherwise, you'll be DQ'd, disqualified. So he has to pick up his son after swimming this distance, 2.4 miles, carry him into the shower, get a quick rinse, carry him to where the transition area is, where the bikes are parked. He puts him in a specially made basket that goes in front of the bicycle, and then he rides 112 miles pushing his son. It's not over. Then there's a marathon after this. So they get off the bike, and of course there's situations where, you know, one of them gets dehydrated, the straps are too tight, they get burned, they get itches, they are bleeding, etc. So, and there's also time cutoffs to each leg of these. So very, very compelling and nerve-wracking. I mean, I was biting my nails watching this. So here I am, you know, I'm still in college watching this, glued in front of the TV like, oh my God, I can't believe, first of all, the athleticism anyone could even achieve doing one of these triathlons, and the Ironman especially. And now this Hoyt father and son team, H-O-Y-T, from Boston, Massachusetts, who's doing this pushing and pulling his son, an insurmountable goal. So he gets on the, starts running and pushes his son, which actually was pretty interesting. He had this device made, which basically became a baby jogger, well before baby joggers existed. And he said, Mr. Hoyt, the father, said, geez, if he only patented it, he would have been a millionaire, because obviously baby jockers are pretty, you know, everywhere. They're just ubiquitous. So here he is. He pushes his son 26 miles, and it's phenomenal. I've cried in front of the TV watching this, and you would have to check your to see if you have a heart and soul if you'd watch this and see this. I've actually recorded it. I think I still have this on VHS. It was just an incredible, incredible, amazing, amazing scene. So now this movie that I was talking about the finishers is incredible. So it basically depicts how this son of a Frenchman, father, who did most of his job away from his time away from his family, came home and then basically has to reunite with his son after all these years. And he does, but basically there's a cold, chilling effect because the father is just kind of pissed off that his son is disabled. And I know I get that to the point, but the crux of this movie is that he learns and reads about the Hoyt family online and says to his father, hey, listen, I want to do this. And his father's basically like, are you nuts? I'm not going to do this. His father was a competitor years before, maybe 20, 30 years before. So the movie's great. He cajoles his father into doing it. And it's just an incredible film. And I urge you to Google The Finishers and take part of the Real Abilities Film Festival, R-E-E-L, Abilities, which is kind of cool, like a double entendre, because obviously Real for movie, the old reels, everything's actually now on hard drive. Isn't that pretty cool? I remember I grew up next to a movie theater a few blocks away from me, and I remember seeing the reels actually delivered to the movie theater, but now they come on a hard drive, a very small hard drive. Isn't that wild? Anyway, I digress. So I recommend it, and I thank all the people from the Disabilities Film Festival, and wherever you are listening in this to PRN on Insight, check it out because they're on the West Coast, they're in New Jersey. I think they are international as well. I don't want to misspeak, but possibly. And real quick, before we meet our first guest, Michelle Hammer, who is an incredible person, very, very creative and a great entrepreneur. And we're going to be talking about mental health and more with Michelle in just a moment. But I got to share a great story with you. So you know I'm from Freehold, New Jersey. So who else is from Freehold, New Jersey? Michelle, do you know who is from Freehold, New Jersey?
No, I don't.
Bruce Springsteen. Of course you know. Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So here I am on the cruise coming back. I read about this great breaking story, which is a nice story because you're reading about all the shit and the politics that's going on. So Bruce Springsteen, lives not too far away from Freehold, actually where I've migrated to, whatever you want to say after 20 years of being away. I'm back there and I love it. Bruce Springsteen is an avid cyclist. He's riding his motorcycle down a road where I always bicycle. Guess what? Bruce breaks down. So these two guys from Freehold, two other cool guys, pull over to help down this broken motorcyclist. And unbeknownst to them, Bruce takes off his helmet. They realize, holy shit, it's the boss. Now, these are two good guys, Dan Barkalow from Freehold and another gentleman who I don't know, just pulled over because they're just good guys doing a good thing, helping somebody out, and it turns out to be Bruce Springsteen. Well, they try to get his bike going, and they were unsuccessful, and they're probably looking back saying, that's kind of a good thing because I don't know whose idea it was, but Bruce got it on the back of one of their bikes, and guess where they went? To the local watering hole. I love it. I love it. Now, this is a guy, as we all know, salt of the earth, talking to two other guys who are salt of the earth, and apparently they just go down to a bar in Farmingdale, New Jersey called Mulligan's and throw a few back, and I guess Bruce calls for, who knows, Patty or somebody to come get him. And he gets his ride, and off they go. But it's a real nice story that I like to share. And also, it's pretty cool that, you know, one of the things, you know, Obama's days are numbered in office, that's for sure. But one of the things that he's doing and did, of course, was invited Bruce to the White House because one of Obama's final acts in office, which is kind of scary, the boss was to bless you, Michelle.
Yeah. You
can say God bless you when we meet Michelle in a few minutes. Was to award him the Presidential Medal. That's it. You two sneezes, that's it. Okay? You're at your limit. Award Bruce with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, this is like the highest medal you can receive from the president. And this is not because he pulled over, was helping other people out. This is because he does great things internationally for humanity, for impoverished nations, and you name it. And good for him, and I'm sure Bruce is a big fan of Obama. I think they have a nice bromance going. As a matter of fact, I remember Bruce wrote a campaign song for Obama, and I'm not sure if it was after the for the first election or for in 08 or 12, I should say. But anyway, other interesting guests who also received awards were Diana Ross, Tom Hanks, De Niro, Lorne Michaels. That one I don't get. You get that, Michelle? I don't get that. And Michael Jordan. I guess he probably took Michael Jordan out to the back of the White House, and they got down on the basketball court and, you know, did their thing because Obama is certainly a huge basketball player. So, you know, I'm a lover of T-shirts. And Michelle, pull that mic closer to you. I'm a lover of T-shirts. And online, you know, I scour all kinds of websites, always looking for good stuff, just because that's one of the things I love to do, is just read about information. And I saw this T-shirt, and it kind of just grabbed my eyes, because being a very visual person, even though I'm visually impaired, it just grabbed me. Then I realized it's more than just a T-shirt. Michelle Hammer is my guest. She started Schizophrenic NYC, and the website is actually schizophrenicnyc.com.
No, it's schizophrenic.nyc.
.nyc.
It's see, a .nyc domain name.
Ah, see, the dot's here.
Yeah.
But my blind ass didn't see it, even though
okay.
I printed it out in 18-point font. See?
Yeah.
And we're going to do like the Skellen eye chest check for me and see if I can read your T-shirt by the end of this.
Can you read my T-shirt?
We're going to check it out in a minute. But let me do a proper introduction.
Okay.
So, well, hell with a proper introduction. Michelle Hammer, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
You are a Brooklyn girl.
I live in Queens.
When did you move to Queens?
I've been living in Queens.
Well, Jesus Christ, I got to get my ass together.
You really do.
My information is just totally wrong. This is just incomprehensible. So at age 22,
yes,
you were diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Yes, I was.
And then your world kind of changed.
My world kind of changed. I mean, well, at 18, I was diagnosed as bipolar. And at 22, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I think from then, I kind of had this, like, upsetness that I was very sad that I was schizophrenic. And then I started telling more of my friends. And then I wanted to do something where I could tell the entire world that I had schizophrenia and that I really didn't care that I did. And I wanted to do something that could raise awareness in some way and get people starting to have discussions about mental health, especially here in New York City. 1 in 5 New Yorkers has a mental health issue. It's most likely way more than
yeah,
that,
exactly.
But nobody reports it. But nobody even
yes.
talks about it because
no.
there's so much stigma. So I wanted to do something that would get people in New York City talking about mental health. And so I started this T-shirt line that has like funny phrases like "Don't be paranoid, you look great," or "It's not a delusion, you're incredible," or just the play on the Rorschach test, giving everybody a new perspective.
Now the Rorschach test is the inkblot test.
Yeah, the inkblot test that like I know they give like a plain black Rorschach test to like any unmedicated schizophrenic. They're going to see it from a different perspective. So I took that test. I switched up the patterns and the colors, and everyone's forced to look at it from a different perspective. Gets you to think differently. Gets you to kind of just think like, you know, what are other people thinking about this, and starts a discussion, and hopefully that discussion we could reduce our end stigma. Just because here in New York City, you only see mental health as it pertains to like a homeless person begging on the street, when really it's so common, but no one talks about it.
Which is very, very important, because people yeah. have to understand that homeless people, they think they're just crazy and they
right.
just give up on life. But no, a lot of them are suffering from mental illness.
Yes, a lot of them are.
We shouldn't discount that.
A lot of them are suffering from
Absolutely.
Mental illness, and they don't have help, which mm-hmm. is very unfortunate, which is why a portion of the profits that I make, I donate to organizations that help out with the mentally ill homeless. But another point that I'm trying to get across is that so many people have friends and family members that have mental illnesses, but they keep it a secret because they feel so ashamed. So my whole thing is, don't keep it a secret. Tell all of your friends, tell all of your family, tell everybody, so that everybody can know that it's really not that uncommon, and there shouldn't be that much stigma, because it's really not that big a deal. As long as you have it under control, you're fine. Or if you need somebody to talk to about it, then you have that friend. But if you keep it all inside and you just get upset about it, you're not going to really solve any problems.
And you feel like you're going to implode. And
yeah.
I can speak from that experience, Michelle, very quickly, that I lost a brother to suicide almost 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years after that, I was suffering from extreme anxiety and panic attacks, which led into depression. And I was deathly afraid to tell my family, because I was worried that they were going to think, okay, oh no, now we're going to lose Mark. No, number two, second mm-hmm. boy in the family, forget it. So I totally understand how people get scared and intimidated, because number one, they're just so ashamed. They feel like they're just losing their shit.
Right.
Coming
exactly.
unglued. And I understand that. And it's funny, because I have very, very great and valued friends in my life back then and now, and I kept it from them.
Right.
It was so much work. I would do interviews with prominent people, sweating, and people like, oh, you're hot? I'm like, yeah, I just not feel well. You know, I ate something too spicy. I did everything in the world to hide it. And now I get on stages all over the country and just scream about the importance of what I went through and what everyone and most people will go through in their lifetime and the significance of it, and let's reduce the stigma, which it's
been. Exactly. Yeah, I've had so many friends of mine that have come up, since I'm so transparent now, they've come up to me talking to me about their depression, or they take medication or this and their family and all this stuff. They tell me stories about their life, their family, but the thing is, it's just between me and them. They don't want any of our mutual friends to know about it. So now it's kind of like I'm in a position of, I know all these things about different friends of mine, but it, you know, they're keeping it a secret from other people. But
more importantly, will they wear your t-shirt?
Oh, a lot of my friends are buying my t-shirts.
Good.
They're wearing the
t-shirts. But it's interesting. You need to have a coming out party.
I feel like I already did.
A mental illness coming out party. Well, you have for the world.
For the Big Apple.
Yeah.
World Mental Health Day.
Yeah.
Share your mental illness today.
Wear it proudly. So now let me ask you some, because bipolar obviously are extremes, highs and lows.
Yes.
Now, is it easy to have diagnosis of bipolar versus schizophrenia?
I think it's kind of hard to separate the difference, especially when you're first getting diagnosed, especially if you're suffering with a lot of paranoia with your schizophrenia. You might not answer the questions the right way, or you might just answer a question just because you want to get diagnosed with something to try to get help, so you're not going to really answer. Plus, if you're really paranoid, you might be answering these questions, but there's that voice in the back of your head telling you to answer them differently than how you really feel you should be answering them.
Wow.
So it wasn't really until I straight up told the doctor, you know, like, oh, I did that because I heard a voice in my head. And he was like, uh-huh. So how many times did you hear this voice in your head? I was like, more than once. And they're like, okay, well, that's a huge sign of schizophrenia.
Okay.
Which I knew that the diagnosis of bipolar was incorrect because I didn't really fit everything. But I knew there was something more there, but I didn't really want to explore it because I was too afraid of what it was going to be. And it wasn't until I was finally ready to admit to myself that something was more there that I was more honest with a doctor and got the correct diagnosis.
Well, also, another upside, I guess, of having schizophrenia, you're going to say, what the hell is the upside, Mark? Is that you're never alone because you talk to yourself.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty common
symptom.
Yeah, I'm
never alone.
Right? Yeah,
never
you're never alone.
Alone.
So when you were in college, your roommates were like, yeah, at one point we heard you talking to yourself. We actually thought there was another person in the room.
Absolutely. My friends would be like, who are you talking to? Who are you talking to? But sometimes it would be like, I'm on the phone, guys. Like, I'm on the phone. Leave me alone. I'm not talking to myself right now. But a lot of times they just go banging on my door. What are you yelling about? I'm like, oh, oops, sorry, guys. I was talking to my coach before, but not on the phone, just to my imaginary coach in my room. I don't know. I just replay conversations over and over again. That's like what a lot of it is. It's a lot of like dwelling on the past, replaying conversations, things you wish you said differently, things you wish went differently, just situations. And then there's also, you know, making up stories that never really happened, elaborating on whole things, making huge, gigantic, you know, big, elaborate stories about things that were so small. I don't really know what I'm trying to explain.
Like when you sleep, when you're in REM, and obviously that's how your mind processes and exercises things because that's how you can kind of make sense of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So is it kind of like that, but you're awake?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it depends how I'm feeling on a certain day, but I'll be walking down the street sometimes and I'll just forget where I'm walking because I'm too busy about what's in my head.
Well, that can happen to anybody, correct?
I guess. Okay. But, I guess that's normal.
Sure.
Okay, I'm normal. I'm fine.
Yeah,
I don't have schizophrenia. I'm normal.
All right.
I'm
take all the shirts offline.
This is real. I'm a normal person. Yeah.
Well, what the hell is normal?
I know. But I don't know. I do, like, I'll be on the subway sometimes and I know I put my headphones on, so it looks like I'm singing to the music when really I'm just having a chat with absolutely nobody. And I look up and there's like three people staring at me and I'm like,
you point to your shirt?
Sometimes I point to my shirt.
Good for you for putting it all out there.
Right.
Because I think it's so important because, you know, with change for anything, you think of Ronald Reagan for Alzheimer's, like he put that on the map. And and it takes for celebrities and or everyday people to just say, especially with social media, it's great that you're kind of like a pop-up shop as well.
Yeah. Over the summer, I set up like a pop-up shop on Mulberry Street. I met tons of tourists from all over the country, all over the world. They were loving what I was doing.
They grab your garments. They go home and people are like, what?
Yeah, exactly. They go home and then that's where the discussion
starts.
Yeah. And I've actually gotten some messages from people like, you know, I wear your Rorschach test tank top every single day. It's the only thing that gives me confidence. I love it. I've gotten so many amazing responses, or like the Don't Be Paranoid shirts, like he gets people so empowered. The responses that I've gotten are so amazing. They make me so happy. And I can't believe that, you know, my little t-shirt line, little clothing line, little thing that I started is just making so many people happy, making people talk about mental health, just starting discussions.
Wonderful. The great
and
ripple
reducing
effects.
Stigma so far.
Sure. Fantastic. Now, medication obviously is key.
Yes.
Because a lot of people are undiagnosed or just refuse to go on medication.
Yes.
Which is a whole nother stigma as well. And I went on medication because otherwise, I can't say it saved my life, but I can't say it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just, it's debilitating. It's totally debilitating. So how well do you feel pre and post medication?
I mean, the medication I'm on now, I think it's pretty great. I finally got myself balanced on like really good medication. I mean, I was on medication for years that I had to take 3 times a day. And if I would miss a dose, I would go into a very angry attitude.
Starting at what age?
18. So I was on one that I had to take it 3 times a day during college. And the only person really keeping me on track was that my lacrosse coach. She would be like, I'd walk into her office, I'd say about 3 words, and she'd be like, I can tell you haven't taken your medication. Take your medication right now. So she was really on me, like, you need to take your medication or you're not playing this year. Kind of. She didn't say it in those words, but that was basically like, I'm not going to be dealing with your nonsense. You need to take care of yourself. And having that on with me, I know that sounds harsh, but that's what I needed.
Sure.
Because if I'm not going to take it, then it's not going to work, and I'm going to be horrible, and I'm not going to be happy, and then I'm going to be angry, and I'm probably going to take it out during like practice or a game, or I'm not going to play right. So once I, you know, got everything under control and everything like that, you know, I was made captain of my lacrosse team because she noticed the difference in me. So that worked for then, you know, coming home from college was different. I found the new doctor was more honest, and now I'm on. I mean, I do take a lot of medication, but I can say that right now I'm the happiest I've ever been.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You're glowing.
Thank you.
And your t-shirt too.
Thank you.
So how difficult and how challenging was it for you in high school?
It was very challenging in high school, mostly because I didn't know that I had a mental illness. I mean, I was just so paranoid, but I didn't know what paranoia was. And I think that nothing ever really helped because, you know, when you go into a meeting with a guidance counselor or a teacher or anything, the first thing they ever say to you is, you can say to me anything you want and I'll keep it a secret unless you plan on hurting yourself or somebody else.
Sure.
And since I was so upset, paranoid, and suicidal in high school, I said nothing because I didn't want to live. I didn't think I'd graduate high school. So if they're telling me that if I want to hurt myself, they're going to tell my parents, I said nothing. So I sat there, stone face. I'm not saying anything.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
To live with that.
Right.
Gargantuan burden on your shoulders.
That's why I feel like I almost want to talk to high school kids and explain to them, you know, what paranoia is, what's like, you know, there's not all paranoia is bad because some people can think, oh, that person's talking about me. Maybe they are. But there's different. You might be on the subway sometimes and I'm thinking, is that person talking about me? Are they talking about me? Are they talking about me? And then I have to think, this is New York City. Nobody cares about me. Why do I think these people are talking about me? Nobody cares. It's just everybody like thinks about themselves.
Now, is that very close to OCD where you kind of have to expose yourself to something like I had intrusive thoughts for years about like jumping off a roof or hurting myself, even though I wouldn't because the brain, obviously there's so much of the brain they don't know about. Scientists and doctors don't know about it. But for some reason, the chemical imbalance, et cetera, you know all this. But would that be considered an OCD intrusive thought? And can you wear it down to the point where it doesn't affect you? Like, okay, someone's talking. You think I think someone's talking about me. Who gives a shit?
I mean, yeah. That's what I basically say. Like, if I'm looking around and I'm starting to think that people are talking about me, I just remind myself, why would these people care about me? They don't care about me. Why? I'm just making this up in my head right now. I kind of learned that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Taking a lot of practice.
Yeah, it's taking a lot of practice because it happens a lot. I'll be like, what? Or I'll try to, like, you know, think I just like I'm waiting somewhere or I'm sitting somewhere. I think the people walking by, I hit the microphone. I think the people walking by might be saying something when they're really not saying anything.
How's this impacted your relationships?
Boyfriends,
girlfriends?
My relationships are fine. I mean, all of my friends are still friends with me. I mean, last year I played flag football team. Nobody knew. This year I played the same flag football team. They all knew. No one treated me any differently. They all thought my clothing line was like the coolest thing ever. And it was perfectly fine. No one's really thought anything different whatsoever.
Significant others?
They're all good.
Good. That's
all
great.
Good.
I mean, you put it all out there. So someone knows what they're getting into.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I applaud you for doing that because, again, you got to be honest with yourself.
Right.
So many of us, we could probably name on two hands, we know people who are just not being honest with themselves in life, whether it's something in their work, their personal relationship, their marriage, the way they take care of themselves, all the things they're denying themselves in life.
Right. I think just like with like AA and stuff like that, the first step is like, you know, admitting you have a problem. And I think when I acknowledged when I went to college and noticed that there is an issue that I'm suffering with and decided to go to the like the therapist at school, like that was like the hugest step in my life that I wanted to get my own help because I realized that I was the one being so paranoid. And that it wasn't real thoughts. It was just paranoia, and that I had to fix something about it.
Now, I imagine, of course, it has ebbs and flows, your good days and better days. On maybe your not-so-good day, does it empower you or lift you up a bit to think about what you've conquered, look in the mirror and see your T-shirts, your line, your business, your website, everything, how monumental this has become?
I mean, yeah, it does. Sometimes I'll read the messages that I get. A lot of people reach out to me. They'll send me messages on Instagram or on Facebook or just send me an email saying they love what I'm doing and everything like that. So if I'm feeling down, I just see what I'm doing. I read these comments and I feel so much better about myself.
Great.
Really.
Great. Fantastic. So yeah. What's next?
What's next?
I don't even know what's next. Launch this baby nationally, internationally?
I mean,
you're tackling New York City, which I think is a phenomenal place. What about the West Coast? Get a hub out there?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I sell all over the country. Sure. I just don't know exactly how to expand right now. I think maybe I need a guidance counselor of some sort. I mean, somebody that could help
don't
me with
that. Don't we all, my friend?
Yeah.
Don't we all?
Maybe, I don't know, someone who could like help me expand. But I mean, I know it's schizophrenic.nyc, but I do sell all over the country. I've also sold to the UK, to Scotland, to the Netherlands. Actually, so funny that a couple of years ago, I worked at a sleepaway camp that had people from all over the country working there. And I get a message from a girl who is Dutch, and she sends me an email, a Facebook message like, hey, I just saw your picture in a Dutch magazine, and I just wanted to let you know that you're famous here now. And I was like, what?
She goes,
can you send me the link? And I was like, sure. And it was like me in this Dutch magazine, and it was a big picture of my face, and it was all in Dutch. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then I got an order from the Netherlands, and I was like, oh, my God, I just sent something
baby,
to the Netherlands.
Bring it on.
It'd
be great if you got some conversations going with some department stores.
I know.
Target, like that. So anyone out there who's affiliated, anyone knows any buyers, sellers, you name it, give me a call.
Give me a call. Just go to schizophrenic.nyc, go to the contact, and just fill out the contact
Michelle,
form.
We have to leave it there. All the best to you. Continue the great work. And
thank you.
Keep us posted.
I will.
And also know that organizations like the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and NAMI are very supporting of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's millions of other people who are out there who don't have the courage to say it right now, but hopefully the more the T-shirts are worn, the more the walls will be knocked down.
Yes, I hope so.
All right. Have a great day, Michelle.
You too.
Insight continues in about 20 seconds, maybe 60.
PRN.FM, your station for progressive viewpoints on politics, economics, health, the environment, and a whole lot more. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
South of the border, down Mexico.
I'm Johnny Mueller, host of the Expat Files, living in Latin America. Heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a show where you'll learn how to work, play, do business, or retire and live the life of Riley. Yes, an amazing number of first world people like you are jumping off the stateside treadmill and voting with their feet. And surprise, surprise, they're finding there really is an American dream. But it's not in Seattle, Milwaukee, or Cleveland anymore. It's down here in Latin America. So be sure to tune in to the Expat Files to find out how you can live the good life on a measly Social Security check.
Hi, I'm David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myth that airs at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on PRN. I use data to deconstruct the myths that infect the modern world. Myths within health and medicine, other areas of science, the justice system, society, media, censorship, and politics. Join me for challenging interviews and discussions. Listen live, as a podcast, or by dialing 701-719-0990. Thanks for listening.
Carry Harrison with you, inviting you to join me on The Smart Show every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're not able to catch me live, you can go to the archives at prn.fm or harrison.fm. Don't forget, it's impeccable behavior to rate the show on iTunes. We come to you each Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, live from Hollywood, where we bring on the movers and shakers, whistleblowers and muckrakers. There's nothing like it anywhere else, and it's here on PRN.FM. If you like a smart show, then join me, Kerry Harrison. It's Harrison on the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Love, lust, and laughter. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Did you know Gaia has aligned with the galactic center? Our energies are rising from 3 to 5D, a transformation that integrates a new heart awareness and embodied ascension. I'm Catherine Davis. Please join me on Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium for conversations, insights, healing, and spirituality with love, peace, and compassion.
Welcome back to Insight. My name is Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network. You got a lot of choices out there. Thank you so much for choosing the Progressive Network, because we got great guests here. Gary Noel comes on at noon. My name is Mark Farrell, still Mark Farrell. Love to hear your feedback at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, or Mark at markfarrellmotivation.com, Mark at markfarrellmotivation.com. You may have some very interesting questions for our second guest, I should say. So I should tell our first guest, second guest, what's wrong with me, that in my previous life, I used to write about sex. I did. And this would be an apt time to introduce Jasmine Loeb. She's a columnist for the New York Observer, a great, great newspaper, which I love to read. She writes about sex and relationships. Are those things coupled? I never knew about that.
I think they might be.
I got to read more of your material because... Anyway, welcome to the show. Model, producer, writer, former figure skater... Fantastic. Real pleasure, and I'm so glad it's brought you here to our show.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be here.
So what got you into this field? Obviously, writing is such a cathartic outlet for anybody, but to find this niche.
Yeah, it was one of those things that just sort of like happened. You know, I didn't go out into the world saying, oh, I want to be a, you know, relationship sex writer. Actually, I went to Hollywood to be an actress.
Well, there you go. End of story.
And so I
Well, you did pretty well.
Yeah, I did pretty well. I got a pilot and...
The Lodger, You Won't Forget About Me, Marion.
Yeah, I was on Kane, which starred Jimmy Smits, and that's sort of what brought me out there. I got a pilot, but then my character was written off the show.
But you hung out with Jimmy Smits.
Yeah, he's pretty.
Is he cool?
He's wonderful.
He seems very cool.
He's so wonderful.
Underrated, totally.
Absolutely. No, he's just fantastic, and he's a real theater actor, which I really admire.
Good.
So, yeah, so I went out there, and, you know, I had some interesting experiences. You know, it was very... there's a lot of sexism in Hollywood.
Well, as we know, because of WikiLeaks.
Yes, exactly.
All those emails that were exposed via Sony.
And so I went out there and I just, you know, I'd gone to Vassar. I took all these feminist theory courses. I sort of had this utopian vision of the world. And then I moved.
But you went to Hollywood.
But then I went to Hollywood to be an actress. Where
you're a contradiction within yourself.
I know, because I, you know,
of course you had to go.
I loved
there.
Expression, sure. And I think it's also part of my path. Mm-hmm. You know, when you kind of face certain adversities, it kind of makes you even more sort of puts you more on the
driven
in the place you're supposed to go.
As a native New Yorker, was that a hard pill to swallow going west, or it was just
natural? Absolutely, but it was also really exciting, and it was the next step. I was acting in New York, and it was just like, and then I also had a really bad breakup, and it was like life kind of like pointed me once again, and I was like, I'm going to go to Hollywood.
Did you do Law & Order before you went west?
Yes, I did Law & Order in New York.
I love that segment that I saw you on.
You know what's so funny? I played an owner of a women's sex club.
Yes. Brothel, I would say.
Right, right.
I love it.
So, women's only sex club.
Oh.
With Mariska Hargitay.
That's right.
Yeah, it was it was really wonderful. She was fantastic. I was so nervous, and she kept saying, loosey goosey. And so, to kind of get me comfortable,
And you're like, is she talking about acting
right,
or something else?
Right, exactly. Hello. Like, where are we going with this? No, she was just fantastic. And then, I, in Hollywood, needed to stay sane because it was literally Mad Men. Yes, I went for some really great roles and that weren't like that at all. I don't want to just totally generalize. But there were a lot of parts that I went out for that was blonde in push-up bra. And, I'd be trying to find a push-up bra because I really wanted the part that might. And I was like, wait, is this who I am?
Far from vacuous.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So then I started going into these parties because that's also, part of Hollywood. You network,
the scene,
you meet people. And literally, it was really intense.
Was there any pushback because you have a good brain and you're well-spoken?
I think that was uncomfortable for people. I think that, it probably would have been easier if I didn't have a brain.
You couldn't turn it off, could you?
I mean, that's the thing. That was my downfall. So I had to write. I had to write to stay sane. And I would come home and I'd write about these parties and I'd be like, who am I? Why am I playing this role? And yet it feels so off from who I am. And from there, a girlfriend of mine who wrote for Vanity Fair Online read one of, a piece that I wrote and loved it. And she and her boyfriend were at New York Natives and they gave me a column called Starfucked. And that's when
Can you repeat that again?
Starfucked.
Now, did you think you were going to hear the word starfucked here today? Because I didn't.
Well, if it's written, they put a little star the U is.
Yeah.
So I guess I could go star.
No. Internet radio, baby. Right. It's starfucked.
Right. So, so that was my first column. It was and I had always dreamed of being an author, but it was how do you get there if you're an actress and you don't really know many people in the writing world? And suddenly it was boom, that happened. And then from there, I felt this incredible sense of self.
Yeah, the conviction. I mean, obviously,
you're
going from stage possibly and from screen to a different platform, which is great because you're being true.
Yes. And I it was just this new person emerged. This sounds superficial, but I'd walk into a party I don't know why it sounds superficial. But anyway, I'd go to a party that might be superficial where normally I would, kind of feel
cringe
or feel like a wallflower. People would be like, oh, what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, I'm an actress. And all of a sudden I walked in and I was like, I'm a writer. And I felt this sense of
empowerment.
And then from there, the New York Observer found out about my column.
Yay.
And that's sort of how it all progressed.
Quickly, though, within months?
Within 6 months. Within 4 months of me starting to publish, that happened. And it was
That speaks volumes of your work.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
But it also, I feel has to do with the serendipity of life. When you're on, when you're in your groove and you're putting yourself out there
you got to put it out there. And plus your energy and your connections, all those deep-rooted things that you've established for years.
Yeah, everything kind of lined up. Mm-hmm. I had been pounding the pavement for many, many years. And then suddenly, boom, it all sort of happened.
How many years later were you in L.A. when this transpired?
It was my sixth year.
Okay, so that's
so
that's
it was
a long
time. And my car lease was up. It was my second car lease. And I remember making a pact with the universe. I mean, this is my L.A. talking. But New Yorkers are getting a bit more
Hey, you're back
spiritual.
Here, so you're home. You can say anything you want.
Yeah, exactly. I remember making a pact and saying, by the time my car lease is up next August, something incredible has to happen. Either something incredible in L.A. or something incredible in New York.
Because to simplify it, you cannot walk in L.A.
Right. Because I can't walk in L.A. I don't want to take the bus. And I don't want to come back to New York feeling a failure, which, to be perfectly honest, that's a whole other thing because failure is in many ways what makes us grow.
Sure.
But that was the fear.
What about content? Were you afraid if you move back east, there would be different sort of content and would it impact your product?
Or, you know,
relationships,
I was,
or relationships and yeah, beings or
I,
beings?
Yeah, because I had been on both coasts, I really saw the similarities between the two cities. And I just decided I would, you know, take some of my experiences in L.A. and then also in New York. And that wasn't so much of an issue for me, but I was really experiencing life as I went along because I was new in New York. So I was writing while I was living. And so I wasn't just sort of like relying on, oh, my L.A. experiences.
Sure.
It was like coming back to New York and having to readjust. So I wrote about that.
Well, you know, when I was thinking about your job, it's not even so much a job. It's totally a lifestyle.
Yes.
And you can take snippets of your lifestyle and compare them, contrast them to pop culture, what's in fashion as a feminist. Mm-hmm. There are some, as a matter of fact, I mean, there's so many things I'd love to broach with you today, certainly with this, our current political state, which is extremely fucking scary. But it's great that you have all these mechanisms to put together. But is there a downside because you feel like you're in a spotlight and can you ever turn it off?
No. Yeah, it's really, that's a challenge. It's also a challenge dating because, you know, I'm definitely looking for a serious relationship and I do want to have a family. And it's hard when you're like dating and writing about your dating life.
Yes, especially when one of the articles was titled, quote, "Penises I Have Known," end quote.
Exactly.
So if I was looking across from you with a fine bottle of wine, I'd be like, oh my God. She's beautiful, but I don't know if I can handle this. Or I'd have to have a pseudonym.
Yes, yeah. No,
like,
it's...
Like Mr. Big.
Right.
Terry Bradshaw.
Exactly. And that was, you know, that was really great. I think it's going to definitely take a specific kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Someone that's very, you know, comfortable with themselves. But at the same time, I also feel that, you know, things might shift and I might not want to speak so openly about my personal sex life if I'm in a committed relationship where I really, you know, maybe I'll take on other issues or
there's plenty of issues when you're married.
Yes. Yeah. But it would that's something that I'd have to negotiate with the person that I'm with. And, you know, I totally like ready to fall in love.
Imagine if I just started crying right now. I'm very good at getting guests to cry. So you'd be like the fifth one this year. Fifth or sixth. But that's very interesting. But, you know, think about this. You have a great gargantuan following. Mm-hmm. So obviously we can't stop the aging process. We all evolve. Obviously in New York City and major urban cities, there are many more single people. But obviously in the next 5 years or so, you know, you move on, but you'll have these followers that are entering different stages of
Absolutely.
Life. What is life about? You know, it's about stages. So I think it would be a natural progression. I imagine, and I can totally understand that it would be kind of intimidating to realize that, well, I have to leave my natural comfort zone of writing about what I love to write about. And so now talk about being a youth. You're a figure skater.
Yes.
I guess you loved it, but then you got very pushed maybe beyond your comfort zone by one of your parents?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard because it was such it was so interrelated. Mm. So I don't necessarily blame either one of my parents, but it was definitely, it was a family thing. Like
sure.
It really sort of, because they so wanted what was best for me and they pushed me so hard because they wanted what was best for me.
Like every parent, sure.
And I had asthma. I had asthma when I was a baby, so they were very worried about my lungs.
Mm. So cardiovascular as an ice skater.
Yeah,
so
they really pushed exercise on me. And at first I loved it, but then things started getting complicated and
hectic schedules,
getting into high school, puberty. I became anorexic.
You had puberty too?
Yeah.
So did I.
I went
oh my
through
God.
One of those.
I knew we had a lot
know,
in common.
I know. It's
wow,
crazy.
It's
did you also develop breasts?
Yes, yes. But there's operations for that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you got through it.
Plus, I was only an A cup.
You seem to be, boobs on you. Anyway.
Do you watch the show, or real sidebar, do you watch the show Shameless?
No, I
you
don't.
You have to
oh,
watch
really?
It. Oh, my
oh, okay.
God. Well, that's
okay.
Because one of the guys, the crazy brother, is dating a guy. I don't even know how this person is labeled, but basically for all intents and purposes, he's a he, but he has a vagina.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
awesome. It was phenomenal. Anyway,
that's amazing.
So continue.
Okay. All right.
I don't know how you go back to what you were talking
right.
about.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the cold ice story.
Yes. So, and like, you know, it was a very, and it brought out the perfectionist in me, the sort of the competitive, competitor and competitive with myself and very self-critical. And so that was a very tough time. I got injured. I really sort of went through, on some level, a breakdown, like bodily, emotionally.
Very common for an athlete.
Yeah. And when my body broke down physically, it's sort of like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, it's sort of like, well, I drove my body to break down by not feeding it and, you know, this whole cycle.
But you decide not to pursue a professional career?
Well, I couldn't. I mean, I'm 5'9". And
too big.
You know,
what guy's going to lift you up? The sexiest man alive, The Rock.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I could have done pairs with
him. Imagine
him
on skates?
Well, I don't know where he was.
He had hair back then, so he probably wouldn't have been that appealing.
Right. So
that's part of the whole lure thing.
But I actually did singles. So that's pairs. But, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So
you went to Vassar College. Obviously.
I went to Vassar College, you know. So, yeah. So the skating was like, it formed like a vulnerability that I felt like I went through. It was a really tough time, and I think it gave me, in my writing and in life, a great sense of empathy for people in pain, people, because it wasn't just physical, it was also emotional, it was, you know, anxiety, depression, all of those things. So I think that as a writer and as a person that, you know, with a platform, like I have a great sensitivity to that, and I really address that in all my writing.
Candid fashion. I love the way you write because it's very conversational. And I know writing has different forms and purposely that way. But I believe that people can connect easier that way because it's an inner dialogue that we always have with ourselves. Correct?
Right. And you have to be able to put your vulnerabilities out there.
Well, it takes years and sometimes therapists and sometimes people die without ever being able to meet that person or ability to open up. I mean, I see it with people in my family who are much older, different generation. It's scary. Once in a while, that door opens for seriously like a minute or two, and it shuts. It freaked me out once or twice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're running out of time, and I can't believe that we're running out of time. But very quickly,
yes, absolutely.
Things that you actually have to consider that too taboo to write about, or maybe too personal, and or you're so nervous when you put the information or content out there that you have to wait for the feedback before you can actually breathe.
Yeah, every single time. Every single time I get terrified and I kind of made a pact with myself. If I'm not terrified when I put something out there, then it's not good.
Ah,
so
sure.
I mean, occasionally I'll put something out that it's like, you know, as terrified about.
Yes.
But yes, everything challenges me. And that's the way you have to do it, especially now, like with the political arena, because I mean, sexuality is so political at this point. So that's also really intense.
Well, I think your role is can be considered, I think, by many when you first think about someone who writes about sex and relationships, very trivial.
Absolutely.
But I think you have a obligation. I'm not putting this on your shoulders.
No,
you know,
I
this
feel it.
As a person who's very, very intelligent, experienced, worldly, and a person who's a feminist, especially in this climate, to make it very crystal clear the importance and significance of a person's rights, boundaries. And I'm talking for men and women.
Absolutely.
And both couples and all different types of relationships, LGBTQ, you name it, more so than ever. And yeah, sure, the fun stuff about, you know, do I go down on him? He doesn't want to go down on me. All that stuff is all great and everything. But
that's all icing. What really counts is like our interpersonal relationships and wanting to connect. And that's what I'm interested in.
By the way, do you like Robert Palmer?
What?
Robert Palmer?
Robert
Palmer?
Wait, oh my God, I sound like
Addicted to Love?
Oh, is this?
Yes. This
okay.
Is
oh, this
chosen
is okay.
For you.
Oh my God, I saw from the. I was thinking of Arnold Palmer, the drink.
No. I'll buy one after here, though. Jasmine Lowe. People can follow you where?
At The Observer. My column's called The J-Spot. And on Twitter, I'm Jasmine Loeb, L-O-B-E, or Instagram, Jasmine Loeb, L-O-B-E.
This has been Insight.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to have to cut
you
off.
God,
we're running out
of course.
Time. We'll have you back soon. My name is Mark Farrell. I'll be at Princeton University this Sunday. Follow me at or email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com for any talks, organizations, corporate, high schools, and more. Gary Knowles next. Have a great day.